League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your Monday morning edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. I hope you weekended well and arrive at this Monday in tip-top form. Unfortunately, of course, I can't report that Ipswich Town weekended well. They were lost in the fog at Oxford United, losing 2-1, more ground loss in the promotion race. I am Mark Heath, back after a week off. Well, a week off the podcast. I was still working, obviously, if the shadowy NewsQuest figures are watching. And I'm joined by my two favourite kings today. Firmly my two favourite kings, Andy the Hutchman, Hutch Hogan Warren, and Roscoe the Prospect, the bearded one, the prodigy, the one who can't drive, Ross Halls. Andy Warren, first of all, how are you? How's things? How is the temperature in household Hutch?
Boiler issues, Mark. I don't want to talk about it any further. Yes, I don't want to talk about it any further than that, please. But boiler issues.
That's
fortunately,
not
though,
that's not a euphemism for your wife as well, is it? We should just stress.
No, it's not. you know, what is helping my ginger pickle hoodie, which having done a bit of a rotation of warm clothing, this comes out on top.
So it's very snuggly.
Yeah, if you want your pickle ginger, they can sort you out with all your SEO and your Google ads and all that nonsense. But they can also sort you out with a hoodie if you're if your boiler breaks.
So. Are they widely available? I don't know. I'm not sure. Just because we're special, we get the merch. I don't know.
Tony, well, maybe can answer that. Maybe they should be.
Anyway, yeah, absolutely. Get involved in ginger pickle. Roscoe, how's things? How's the temperature in your house?
It's okay. I didn't get lost in the fog. Did anybody ever watch, there's a film called The Fog in the 80s, but there was also a film called The Mist, which is a Stephen King novel, and it's just creatures coming out, and I wouldn't say I was worried for the players, you know, creatures coming out under the mist and the fog, but I was just sort of, you know, during the game, I just had that little moment where it's like, oh, there a creature come out and nick Sam Morsey or something, but that didn't happen.
That would be a story. Imagine that. Morsey captured in the 85th minute by an undead creature of some sort. Fantastic.
Yeah. I'd still have to give him a player rating, wouldn't I? What would you do?
Was doing well before he was taken by the undead. Right then, friends. Before we get into the game, obviously there's five. There's a lot to talk about around the game and whether it should have been played, etc., etc. But first of all, we try not to go up and down too much on this podcast because obviously with the calm, measured voice of responsible journalism, apart from me, who is prone to hyperbole. And in that fashion, friends, I want you to imagine that I've got a big red button right next to me here, and it's marked panic. Andy and Ross, should I be pushing it? Should I be thinking about pushing it? Because Ipswich Town have lost some serious ground in the race for the top two. They're now 7 points behind Sheffield Wednesday with 19 games left. And not only that, Derby County are coming like a bloody steam train. 18 games unbeaten, only 4 points behind Town with a game in hand. Are Ipswich Town going to finish fourth in a three-horse race, Hutchie? Tell me it's not so.
No good comes from panicking, I would say. So don't press the panic button, because panic won't help anyone, and panic isn't the way out of a problem. But Ipswich Town have got a problem, haven't they? It's looking problematic. The form isn't. It's a long way off the 2 points a game that Ipswich were comfortably at. They've lost ground, as you say, and they're going to have to string wins together now. We felt like this felt like a verging on a must-win game going to Oxford, and they didn't, and they were poor, very poor. I'm not pressing the panic button, Mark, but it's very concerning.
Rostradamus, how are you feeling about things? You famously declared the season to be dead in December last year. Obviously, we've had nothing but positivity around this season to date. But when you look at the table now,
and you think there's 19 games left. Okay, there's a long way to go. But now you're kind of relying on Town putting together a serious winning run, and also the likes of Sheffield Wednesday having a bit of a stumble, which they're not showing any signs of doing at the moment. How are you feeling about things?
Yeah, this time last year, I was going into every game when, whatever, into dead rubber pretty much. But I'm a bit concerned, but I'm not panicking just yet. It's been a poor run of form. The draws and the Oxford defeat on the weekend. But there's still loads of games to be played, and I think we just didn't want to be boring and just run away with the league. I think we wanted to sort of bring a little bit of just for us to talk more about up and down. So. Yeah, it is concerning, and I understand the Town fan base, because we've had false dawns before, haven't we? Where we're like, ooh, are we going to do it? But let's not panic, ladies and gentlemen. Still lots of game to play. I think teams will drop points, but annoyingly, Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday are winning machines at the moment. But hopefully they'll lose at some point, and but that's the problem. We are now hunting the hunt. No, what's the phrase? What's the phrase?
Work it out. You'll get there.
No, we'll be here too long. People know what
we are hunting the hunted, as opposed to being hunted. Essentially, is what you're saying. You're on your way, Rossi. You should have just believed in it and gone with it.
Yeah.
Of course, Town still have to play Sheffield Wednesday at home. That's going to be massive, isn't it? In the running.
Yeah. That's a huge game. But you know what? The reasons why I'm not. I'm not a panicker. It's not my vibe generally. And it's not particularly helpful, I don't think. But the reasons why I'm not is because I trust, I like the group of players that they've got. And I'm really hopeful that the new signings can click and give everybody a lift. They haven't had a chance to do that yet. Two debuts for Broadhead and Clark at Oxford. We'll come on to that. But I think those two in particular, obviously George Hurst too, they're going to be regulars in this team for the rest of the season. And I'm hoping that can inject something into this. Also, I think they're capable of winning runs of games. They've got a large quantity of the bottom six to play around that Sheffield Wednesday game. Bristol Rovers in there as well, which is a bit of a tough fixture, I think, as well. But they've got the tools to build the momentum that they need, but they need to dig themselves out of this run, I think. And I'll be honest, this Oxford game was a low in that run. There are draws in there that you can sort of square away. This one, not despite the conditions, not so much.
Okay, well, shall we talk about the game then? That's a perfect segue into it. Stewie, who's not around today, referred to it as possibly the worst performance under McKenna. Normally, before these podcasts, if I haven't seen the game, I will watch the highlights, but I can't find the highlights anywhere. I can only think that's some sort of reflection on the actual conditions. Neither Town nor Oxford have put them out, so I can't
have
see
they not? Today.
No, I'm assuming that's because you can't see anything. So quite before possibly. We get onto the game itself, actually, obviously the big question around it, the narrative afterwards was, should the game even have been completed? Because it was a proper P-Super from the pictures you were sharing, pictures I saw from Rossi and Warren. It was one of those where you could barely see your hand in front of your face sort of situations. And there were conversations around calling it. Both managers came out afterwards and said they were happy to play it another day, but were told, well, if we call it now, I'm afraid the result will have to stand. So how do you feel about all of that?
I think they were definitely right to start it, even though on the drive into Oxford, the fog was very low and very very noticeable on our drive in. The Kassam Stadium is probably the worst stadium you could be playing at in terms of fog, given that there's a completely empty end with no stand where that fog can just come in. Some bloke was telling Stu that floodlights make fog worse. Is that true? We just accepted that was the truth.
I think that's why you have different fog lights on your car, isn't
it?
Because a normal headlight does make it worse.
Yeah, so but we believed that. Just
that sounds like a really interesting conversation, though. I can imagine you were well into that.
I wasn't involved in it, thankfully. Oh, okay. Stu reported back on it, and I was fascinated to hear that secondhand. no, I don't think it should have been completed. I think I think the yellow ball could have been out earlier than it was. I enjoyed that that appearing about half an hour in. That was good. I think that could have been there from the start. I think from the start of the second half, it was pretty apparent that things had got worse. And if you just had to look around and see that it was not going to get better, only worse. And it did in the second half. We were sat directly opposite the Ipswich fans, and that stand could have been empty. And we wouldn't have known, couldn't make out any people whatsoever. Even like the stewards' jackets by the end of the game had gone. Spoke to Leif Davis afterwards, and he said he couldn't see Wes Burns. Obviously, Leif Davis is on the left, Wes Burns is on the right. So those aren't conditions to be playing a football match in, a high level, pretty high stakes football match. That's not right. So no, I don't think it should have been finished. And there's obviously a discussion about the referee's interpretation of the seemingly non-existent 75-minute rule, which it will frustrate Ipswich. But I don't think that should completely sort of remove all critique of how the game was lost either. But the fog shouldn't have been allowed to dominate that game.
Rossi, you were pitch side as ever. What was it like actually being down at pitch level? How bad was it?
It was very bad. It was very bad. You know, the first half weren't too bad, you know, because it was still, you know, sort of daylight, weren't it? But yeah, when you've got a stadium that has has no protection from just anything because you've got a car park and one of your stands. I couldn't believe the lino could see. You know, because I was in the same line in the second half. I was basically right next to where the lino was running up and down. And I was like, if I can't see, the lino can definitely not see over there. So an offside or whatever. So, and of course, the fans, they brought out the cheer, you know, we can't see, the rest. But yeah, it was an interesting watch. And the tape pictures, it was challenging. Me and Warren, the other photographer, we had a little bit of a laugh at half time saying, yep, this is going to be a tough second half getting images. But but yeah, an interesting game to watch through the fog. But as you know, Hutchie said, we still lost the game, and there's still things to talk about. You know, it wasn't because of the fog, it was because both teams had to play in this fog. So
that's my take on it. I generally, I don't know if it's because a lot of my sporting background is watching, and we talked about this last night, Hutchie, the NFL, and they never call games off. Nothing will stop an NFL game other than, like we had the other day, a serious, serious health issue with one of the players. But they will play in every weather, whatever. The only thing they'll come off the field for is lightning, because obviously that poses a clear and present danger to player safety. So for me, I'm very much of the, it's the same for both teams. Stop moaning, get on with it. And I suppose there is an argument around the fans because they'd paid to watch a game. And I know game day wise, a lot of the guys were saying, I could only see half the pitch. We're having to go on what the noise that was coming from the other stand to kind of gauge what may or may not have been happening. But for me, you know, clearly I wasn't there. And I'm a bit gung-ho on these sort of things. I say, play on, friends. It's the same for both sides. Get on with it. Stop moaning, especially after the game. Yes, Ross?
Sorry, I don't like to interrupt. I'm, you know me. I also didn't want to go back there on a Tuesday night after an hour's been played. I
was like, and that's the real thing.
just play, guys. You know, it's 1-1 still. I know you can't really see the match, but come on, let's just finish the game. We don't really want to come here. Because, last time I think it was a couple of years back when it was unbelievable rain. I'm sure you were there, Andy, where the game nearly got banned because it was so much rain. Thankfully, they carried on. But something always happens at Oxford when we go there. You know, last year, the late equaliser, the rain, this time the fog. Oh, dearie me. But yeah, I was just getting the game done. I was saying to the fans, stop singing about that song, you know, can't see, you know, a thing, because I was like, that may make the ref want to stop the game. But thankfully they finished the 90 minutes. But yeah, we did lose.
No, I think it should have been off. I don't think they should have finished that game. I think it was farcical. It wasn't a game of football. Not for me.
Okay, fair enough. We disagree. Farcically, however, Hutchie, they did play the game and Ipswich Town did lose. Your thoughts on that? Because it sounds like McKenna came out afterwards and kind of almost intimated that it was unfair of Oxford to hoof the ball into their box because no one could see the ball.
I don't think he was suggesting it was unfair for them to do that. But I think you now have to separate the two things. I don't think the game should have been finished. I think it was a proper football match. I agree with the managers there. But it did finish, and that's where you want Ipswich to, and that's where I kind of jump on your train a bit, Mark, because from that point, when it is going to finish, it is the same for both teams, and that's how you then judge the game accordingly. And Oxford dealt with and attacked those conditions better than Ipswich did. And it's not just that second half either. Ipswich weren't on it in the first half when it was better and playable. It wasn't an Ipswich team that we've sort of seen. Paul Cook would be telling you at points that it's not, I don't recognise that team, if that's what an expression he'd have used. But it wasn't a good performance from start to finish. But when the fog came down, Oxford attacked the fog, and which sounds ridiculous to say, but they did, and it worked for them.
Yeah, you have to change the way you play, sure. You have to play the conditions. And the other thing I was really interested with post-game is McKenna saying that he hadn't seen Oxford play like that all season. They really switched things up, didn't they, from having been tonked at Portman Road on Boxing Day?
Yeah. I think Oxford surprised Ipswich a little bit in the first 20 minutes of the game at Portman Road on Boxing Day as well. So, teams changed the way they play to attack Ipswich. You have to expect that. I think they've been a 4-3-3 generally all the way along. They switched it up and to a back three with an interestingly made up midfield of players popping up in different positions. And I didn't think Ipswich coped particularly badly with that. I just think they weren't on it themselves. Because if you look back through this game, and the frustrating part of it is you look back through the game and all the better chances were Ipswich. They conceded two pretty poor goals. The first one in particular was a dreadful goal to concede, which you won't have seen, Mark, because it's been hidden from it's been hidden from memory. And there'll be three players in there that will be quite thankful of that, because it was a really poor goal to concede. But Ipswich had the better chances throughout the course of the game and didn't take them. And that's what put them in the vulnerable position again in the second half.
Mm. I know in your ratings there were quite a few fours being handed out, Hutchie, and only 1-7, which was Sam Morsey. So all round, a pretty poor showing. Like I say, Stewie said, I think it was potentially the worst under McKenna, and also suggested that maybe sides have started to work out town a little bit.
Yeah, possibly. I would argue that town just were poor. Like I don't. Oxford obviously posed their challenges, but those challenges didn't amount to. They didn't amount to a dominance of the game, and they didn't amount to particularly many chances in the game. I just thought Town were off it. The fours you mentioned were handed out to the three players involved in the first goal conceded, which is one of the worst. It's really poor defended. Wolfenden, Danasian, both really easily pushed off the ball by Yannick Wilshire. And then Burgess found himself just completely no man's land, flat-footed, easy for Wiltshire just to step past him to poke into the corner. Really, really poor. That goal really angered me. It's really poor. Just an example of I think just a team not on it on the day. Yeah. And Oxford are a good team. They're not where they want to be in the league, but they're a good team, and they. That 3-0 from Portman Road on Boxing Day was a bit misleading in some ways. Ipswich did dominate after scoring the first goal, but were easy winners in the end. But the opening to that game was very, very even, probably going Oxford's way on the scorecards, Mark. There's one for you to make you smile. Before a nice big jab from Ladapo rocked them. So I've got no more boxing. Frustrating, really frustrating, and poor from town. They need to be a lot better than that.
They do indeed. Debuts, left, right and centre as well on Saturday. We're kind of expecting Hurst to start up front, make his full debut. And also we saw Broadhead and obviously Harry Clark returning home, which is a wonderful story, which I very much enjoy. How did those guys get on, Rossi? From what you could see, shall we start with Hurst, his full debut? How did he go?
Yeah, you know, I think I was as expected. I think we all sort of predicted he'd probably start. You know, he put himself about, which I think is what we're going to expect from him. He did seem a little bit rusty because he hasn't played much football, really, even at Blackburn. You know, he hadn't played much there. You know, produced some, you know, neat touches. And I will admit, after the game, you know, I was chatting to the, you know, the KOA army and sort of said, oh, I don't know about this Hurst bloke. But then I sort of reflected on it a bit more. And he showed promising, you know, signs. And I think when he's fully up to speed, we've got a player there. He should have scored in the second half. But no, a promising sort of start to life for him. And, you know, he came off the bench, you know, last week against Plymouth, did really well. But yeah, he's still a bit rusty, I have to admit. But no, promising signs so far.
It's going to take him time, isn't it? As you say, he's not played a lot of football and he's been kind of dropped into the heat of a promotion race. Hutchie, what did you make of him and Broadhead and Clark, who hit the bar, of course, in the second half?
He did, yeah. Rusty would be the word I use for Hurst. He's got the attributes. We know that they've chased him for a long time. His movement looks good. The movement to get onto the cross from Burns that he just put wide was good. He should have hit the target, though. I do think he looked quite rusty, and that is probably to be expected. What they do, whether they play, let him play himself into form and fitness, we'll see. He did look rusty to me. Broadhead, I liked. He came on, he ran with the ball. Town lack and have done for quite some time, really, sort of throughout League One, really, players that can dribble. I like players that can properly dribble. Obviously, Wes Burns is a dribbler on the right side, but I like him. He can dribble. He can come inside and he attacks the box. So I feel sure that he will start on Tuesday night against Morecambe. And Harry Clark, we only saw for a few minutes, but in that time, he did manage to hit the bar, which would have been wonderful if that had just dropped in rather than up bounced up onto the bar. So I think he'll start too.
Do you think it's inevitable? We've been talking, haven't we, about the denascence and this remarkable story that Janoi's been on, and now he's an every game starter. We've all been looking ahead at how he could possibly fall out of the side. Is that going to happen now that Clark's here? Are we going to see the end of the denascence and, to quote Ross Wishart on Twitter, the start of the Haravival? Haravival?
Okay. Good mark. Full marks for effort. I'm not sure about that one. There have been multiple eras of denascence, haven't there? This is just the end of one and a wait to the start of another. But yeah, I feel sooner rather than later. I think that switch will be made. Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that struck me, and I'm sure you probably had a conversation around this on Friday, the size of the squad now, the man management issues around that, and the people who didn't even make the bench on Saturday. I did a brief look, jotting down. So those who couldn't even make the bench, Cameron Humphreys, who until recently we were having genuine conversations about whether or not he should be starting, Greg Lee, formerly of this parish, very much a form player at the start of the season, George Edmondson, who, God, half a season ago, the idea that George Edmondson wouldn't even be on the bench would be heresy, let alone even starting. Carl Edwards, we talked about, an X factor potentially. Gassana had been KVY, so just a few there who couldn't even make the bench, Hutchie. Is that an issue? Is that a nice problem to have? What do you reckon?
I think it's a nice problem to have. If you look at some of, let's be realistic about some of these as well. Some of those that you've read out there, Gassana had, mate, would not have expected to make that bench. Mm-hmm. There's no way that Kane Vincent-Young and Greg Lee would both have expected to make that bench. And there's no way that both Richard Keogh and George Edmondson would both have expected to make that bench. Thankfully, Keogh will want to play. I'm sure he will. But I don't think that poses any kind of man management issue for McKenna, because Keogh is a man and who can manage himself. I really hope they sort out that loan to Burton, because he's going to really struggle for meaningful action, I would imagine, from this point on. So I hope they sort that out. Humphreys, I think you can manage. And I do think there's going to be an element of switching that bench up a little bit. But I would hope at some point they kind of hone in on a preferred 18. But all it's going to take will be one or two injuries, which undoubtedly will happen in the next 3 or 4 months. And all of those players will be involved in benches again. So I think it's a nice problem to have. It will require some exertion of man management skills from McKenna, but I think he can just about manage that, given that the character of those that he's got within that group, I would say. And it will literally only take one, maybe two injuries, and that whole a lot of those issues go away.
Mm. Looking at that, you mentioned there Hadmi and potentially exiting to Burton, which would certainly make sense, wouldn't it? Are there any others you think? Could someone like George Edmondson, for example, be looking at potentially going out in January? Or
I hope not. No, I wouldn't say so. George is a funny one of late, isn't he? We've not seen much of George for quite some time. Interested to know why that might be, but I think you're one injury, probably not even an injury away from him being a starter potentially. The bench is different. You don't need, if you've got Harry Clark on your bench, you don't need to carry a right back or a centre back. He can play both of those positions for you. That's just bench play. But I think if McKenna made any kind of change to his centre back pairing, Burgess or Wolfenden, they'd come out of the 18 completely, potentially, because Danasian's the same. Danasian can go on the bench and cover all positions at the back. So I don't think not making the bench is necessarily an example of you just being miles away from ever playing. I think players, we might have to get used to players coming from outside the 18 into the starting 11 potentially. But yeah, in terms of players moving on, I think with Clark signed, I think Vincent Young's going to struggle to, his versatility might prove useful, but he's going to struggle for starts, isn't he? I can't see many for him there. So he would be one I'd maybe, you never know.
You got any thoughts on this ridiculous depth, Roscoe, and the kind of man management challenge, not problem, but challenge that it poses when you've got these players, some of them, we surely understand that they're maybe not on the kind of very tip of McKenna's tongue, but the likes of Cameron Humphreys and George Edmondson would expect maybe to be at least on the bench.
Yeah, some of those players, George Edmondson, I think, you know, as you said earlier, you know, you thought, what? Like, definitely this time last season, you think, George Edmondson not even making the bench.
Yeah.
But McKenna has got a lot of man management to do here, and I'm sure he'll be able to do that. I think, you know, I'm surely some of these players knew this when they signed, but also they're like, they want to start, you know, any footballer wants to start. But yeah, I can't, as you said, yeah, Gassan Hadmi, that needs to be sorted. Vincent Young, he's out of contract, isn't he, in the summer. You know, I've always liked him, but he's not going to play football, is he? He's not going to play in front of Genoa, Harry Clark. You know, of course he can play that Wes Burn role if he really wants to. He can play left back if he really wants to. But yeah, McKenna, you know, he's wanting these players and he's still got those players there. He's just going to have to, you know, man management, basically, run it. And, you know, it's a great thing to have, but also sometimes having too many players can be an issue as well. Because, you know, as Annie said, I really do like this squad of players. I think this is, you know, I believe in this squad. But yeah, it's getting hard to now choose, like, who is going to be leaving? You know, Con Edwards, as you said, X factor. But is he going to play? Probably not. Yeah, it's a good issue to have, but also, yeah, my mind is just, yeah, we're trying to think where you can go. And every week, you're like, who's going to be on the bench? You know, Cameron Humphreys missed out, you know, but then next week he'll be back. Yeah, it's just one of those things.
Okay. Any other notes from the game? Because I've got a theory I want to drop on you about the whole Ipswich Town form, which I've done research on everything.
Show me your working. Drop your theory.
Okay, theory. Since Town fell apart against Charlton on October 29th, they've played 10 games, League One, not looking at cups. They've taken 14 points from a possible 30 in those games. They've won three, they've drawn five, and they've lost two. So, Andy, looking at that and what happened at Charlton, which was a freakish kind of once in a lifetime sort of scenario, but clearly will have an impact on psyche of players. Have they, could one argue, that kind of impact is still lingering? Have they recovered from what happened at Charlton? And could you look at that and go, well, maybe they're a bit fragile still?
You can't ignore it. I'd say you definitely can't ignore it, because that was a body blow that afternoon. Mm. But I don't think, look, I can't get inside everybody's minds. None of us can, but it's still, it's still a fun theory to discuss. I would say no. I would say it's not a massive, overbearing sort of always present factor in what's been going on recently. Mm. The results since then, you've got the Cheltenham and the Fleetwood games in there in the league, which is kind of the continuation of a theme we already saw, those two games where they just couldn't work it at home. In that time, they won really well at Exeter. They beat Peterborough in that time. They beat Oxford well on Boxing Day. Illness and everything combined over Christmas. The Plymouth game was another kind of freak one at the end, but it's, I don't know if it's necessarily the Charlton game. I think it's ongoing issues. They've had those issues were in place already, but it's certainly not. I don't think it's, you certainly can't look at it and ignore it. It's a big part of this season so far, I would say. It's a big part of it, and maybe highlighting some issues rather than causing them, potentially. Maybe the best example of some issues.
I know, I appreciate it's beautifully simplistic, like myself.
Well, but that is the beauty of football, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
We're allowed to be like that. It's fine.
And I suppose if you count that actual Charlton game in that run, that would be 15 points out of a possible 33, which is not good form at all, is it, Rossi? Have you got any thoughts on the dynamics? Have things changed since then, do you think?
I get where you're coming from, because, yeah, I'm sure it takes a while to recover from that, because it was a freak result. You know, I know some people are still going back to that 4-4 draw. Was that the sort of switch on, or is this team going to do it? But yeah, that was just a freak result. And, you know, we've had some body blows since then. Little boxing reference there for you. You know, with late equalizers, late, you know, goals and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of these players have had a lot of moments in their careers where they've had to pick themselves up and go again. But yeah, sadly, this team has had so many different moments like this where they've conceded late goals or, you know, not played well. But yeah, I think that's a good take from you, though, my friend.
I love the way you both kind of respectively told me that's nonsense in a really kind of.
No, it's not nonsense. It's not nonsense. It isn't nonsense. It's huge. It's a hugely relevant sort of point across the season. I just don't think that it's. I just don't think it's kind of the overarching season ruiner. I don't think it's that. I don't think it's still in everybody's minds. I think they're a strong group of players. I think that will be clear of their minds. I don't think that's weighing on them, but it's undoubtedly a big blow during the season. And like I'm not normally the one chucking out the boxing analogies, but when you take a big blow, it does take a little while to kind of just get back going again. But I would say the Charlton game was more of an example of ongoing issues rather than necessarily just being that massive knockout punch that's left you kind of staggering around for the rest of the fight. But it's hugely relevant to the kind of the course of the season.
Mm. Okay. In terms of going forward, there's 19 games left. We'll talk about Morecambe in a minute. Clearly, Town now have to be approaching perfection for those 19 games. They've got to certainly go on some sort of run. Two things they need to sort out, Hutchie. We've been talking about defending high balls into the box all season. and also profligacy in front of goal, not taking their chances. Are those the two main issues that Town have got to sort out in these next 19 games and quick?
Yeah, the second one of those is the bigger one, I think, because if they'd taken their chances at Oxford, and yeah, you have to put some caveats in there. Connor Chapton had a really, really good chance to score with a header from 5 yards out, but he couldn't see the ball. You can't legislate for that. That's not on him, really. But yeah, taking chances is the issue. And that's my hope, is that the new signings will just give that energy and that ability to do that. Obviously, you're looking at Broadhead and Hurst to do that. And I also hope that could bring the best out of Ladapo as well. So I think they can still go up automatically. I really do. It's difficult. They've made it difficult. And they're going to have to put together some serious winning runs to do that. But I think they've got the players to do it. I just, that injection of life from these new sites. They've also got those players. It's not like that. We're not sitting here saying, right, there's 7 days left of the transfer window. Go out and bring in your spark. I think the spark's already here. They just need to ignite it.
Do you think, before we move on, Kieran McKenna has had a kind of dream start almost to his time at Town? Last season, yes, he didn't quite go as planned. But this season, he's been pretty much spot on. Everything he's tried has worked, and Town have been this fantastic improvement, and he's been this calm, considered, really kind of analytical, intellectual force that everyone's kind of loves hearing talk and get on board with. And I know you can't say that he's under pressure, because that's nonsense, but you could argue, I'd imagine, that this is the biggest test of him so far, Hutchie. Have there been times in this run or whenever that when you thought, actually, if he had that again, he might make a different decision? Are we kind of seeing that kind of thing now? Or
Possibly. I think, you know, he might think they should have put the ball in the box more against Oxford at the weekend, but they attacked. They made chances. It's just they didn't, maybe. And I'd say he is under pressure, not for his job. Not under pressure, but under pressure to succeed. And he'll be putting himself under that pressure. But I think I've got a lot of faith in him. And even though he is under this pressure, he's not changed his demeanour at all. That's always a worrying sign when managers change their demeanour and the way they speak and the way they're acting. Don't feel like he's done that particularly. The thing is, you hear a lot about there's no plan B. I would argue that plan A is working. They're just, for whatever reason, can't take their chances. I think the plan is working. It's the execution of it. And I don't know if necessarily is plan B pump the ball into the box. I don't know if, is that going to be more effective? They're making these chances. They're just not taking them. And it's impossible to say why that is. The players are capable of scoring these chances. They're just not taking them. I would argue that plan A is still working for Ipswich, and that actually, I don't think switching to some completely different approach to playing football is going to be effective. I don't know if that's what you need to do to succeed. Are they more likely to score by tossing the ball into the box, hopefully, or by working the ball in the box to make these chances that they're not taking? Maybe it's somewhere in between. Maybe it's some subtle tweaks here and there and some earlier changes. I don't know. But it all adds up to me still feeling that this group is very capable of doing what they want to do this season. I do feel that. But this is a kind of a timely reminder of time sort of running out a little bit and things just getting that little bit further away from them than they would be comfortable with it being.
And just, I'm just saying, but if the playoffs started today, Ipswich Town would play Barnsley. And there's all sorts of narrative attached there. Norwood's goal at the weekend, Norwood coming back to haunt Town, all that sort of stuff. We don't want that. Please, no.
There's narrative everywhere in the playoffs, isn't there? Like, it literally is, you can't move for it. You just that. It's like a pea soup of... Is that all about pollution, pea soup fog? Is it about Is that what it's about? Kind of like,
yes, it's kind of smog sort of vibe, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
There's narrative everywhere. If a playoff campaign is incoming, there's McGoldrick, there's Norwood, there's Bolton, everything.
Hmm. Okay. Before we move on to Morecambe, one more thing by way of news we should mention. Matt Penny has come back from Motherwell and he's gone straight out on loan to Charlton. Can't technically really call them promotion rivals, but he'll be playing in the same league, Rossi. What do you make of that?
Yeah, good move for him. Did it really well at Motherwell, of course. You know, won player of the month multiple times there, supporters player of the month and all that. Yeah, he wasn't going to get back into the town side with Leif Davis and Greg Lee and co. I know Hutch probably have a different opinion on this, but I didn't think he was very good, to be honest. Not as bad as Miles Kenlock, as everyone knows. But I think there is a player in there, Matt Penny, because he has done well before at Sheffield Wednesday and stuff like that. And he's proven at Motherwell, and I'm sure he'll do a right at Charlton. I know they're a weird team as well, Charlton. They're weird. They've got some good players there, but I don't know. They're up and down all the time. But no, best of luck to him there. And that is pretty much probably the end of his town career. I know Andy's done a great story this morning. Read that on our websites.
Welcome. Really great, that one.
Great, absolutely great. Fantastic. Yep.
Very good. But yeah, that's all I've got to say about Matt Penny.
Fair enough. Hutchie, you've written a great story. A tremendous, fantastic, and engrossing, compelling read for those who've not seen it. That's the end of Matt Penny at town, isn't it? We're not going to ever see him, barring utter disaster. We're not going to see him pull on an Ed Sheeran-sponsored town shirt again.
No, it would be a surprise. It'd be a surprise. He's out of contract in the summer. Town do have an option on him, so they can control his next movement to an extent. But no, I would say that's very unlikely that he would play for Town again. I thought he was capable at times. He was up and down. I'm not going to go overboard about it, but I thought he was decent. He was kind of a bit Luke Garberty. For me, like, you could have some good games and then others where he doesn't look like he's able to defend particularly well or track runners in behind. But he had some moments like that, like the second half of Luke Garbutt's time, I'd say. I'd describe him as capable, but Town need more than that now. They need more than sort of capable players, and that's, you can see that by what they did in the summer. They spent £1 million plus on a left back from a Premier League club who kind of maybe puts Penny into perspective a little bit. And with Greg Lee as well, with the kind of added muscle and defensive ability that he's got, that's something that Penny didn't have. So big upgrade in the summer, and the writing was on the wall for him from there.
If you were not watching on video, Ross was not having the Luke Garbutt comparison, were you, Rossi?
No, but... As I said, there's one or two games I thought, we've got a player in him, Matt Penny. But then I don't know what game it was, but I thought, oh my God, this is bad.
Definitely it might have been Bolton. Or what was it, Bolton away? Because in McKenna's third game, he was really poor and didn't play again for 3 months after that.
Yeah. But yeah.
Okay, right, let's move on. It's Monday morning. Town have got another chance to kick it in the goal and go again tomorrow night against Morecambe, which is probably what you want after a defeat like that at the weekend, a chance to put things right and start a run. Let me reel off some stats before we talk about Morecambe. Morecambe are 21st in the table, but they've got two games in hand. That's because the last two games they were due to play have been called off, postponed by the weather. So when they arrive in Suffolk tomorrow, they won't have played a game for 2.5 weeks. Before that, however, they'd won two games in a row. They beat Cheltenham 2-1 and struggling Burton 5-0. And of course, Town beat Morecambe 2-1 at Morecambe, at Tyson Fury's hometown, back in October, when they had the luxury of being able to give up a Connor Chaplin penalty miss, I recall, and still won 2-1. Hutchie, that big button I had, that was marked panic, I pushed to one side because you told me don't panic, Heath. Nothing, no good can come of panic. I've got another button here, which is red as well, which says must win. Am I pressing that one?
Yeah, you can press that one.
Yeah, go on.
Give that a little press. Yeah, of course it is. Ipswich need to win games and they need to string them together. And yes, they've won three in a row, but you can't. It's Morecambe at Portman Road. All the respect in the world to Morecambe, but Ipswich Town have better football players than Morecambe have got, and they need to show it and they need to win. For the table, for the fans, for their own confidence, it's a huge game for them, and they obviously need to win it.
Roscoe, it's a must-win game. What do you do with the team? Because we already talked, there's so many options. Is this the game that you stick Harry Clark in, for example? What do you do up top with Hurst and Ladapo? Does Broadhead start?
Yeah, I think you start Harry Clark because he's cup tied, isn't he, for Saturday for the Burnley game. So he's straight in to make his full debut, his Portman Road debut. That's gonna be great. He was already, I think he's somewhat of a fan favorite already because of that connection. But even during the warm up when he came on, and in the last few minutes when he had a throw in, he was straight away like with the town fans going, come on, let's go. Trying to pump up the crowd. He starts for me. Do you know what? Broadhead, start him. Why not? Bring him in. I thought he was lively when he came on. And a man, I think, he'll actually take a shot. That's one thing I get annoyed about this team sometimes. Don't take a shot. Just have a shot. Definitely with the fog. Come on, just take a pop. Their goalie may not even seen it. Broadhead to start for me. Maybe start Ladapo, maybe. But then, it's a tricky... Oh, once again, you got a debate in, aren't you? Where in terms of like, Hurst did right when he started, but then Ladapo, there's always that talk. Is he better when he starts? He's more fired up. I know Andy has still always said that on the boot room, sometimes Ladapo is more fired up if he starts. So do you start Ladapo in this one?
I would.
Yeah. I'm definitely starting Ladapo in this game. Definitely.
Yeah. I would, actually, but I don't think they will. I think Hurst might... I've got a feeling they might try and play Hurst into form. But I would start Ladapo, and I would absolutely start Broadhead and Clark. I think you could get the fans into the game immediately by doing that. And just build up a bit of an atmosphere. Fear is that, is there some kind of nervous atmosphere inside Portman Road again? We've become used to that. I don't think there will be, but I think you can, show some real intent, I think, there by giving two first starts out to two good players.
What would you say is the best team? All things being equal now, Hutchie, everyone's fit. Who would you say is the strongest starting eleven for Town?
I've not seen Broadhead and Clark play for Ipswich really, but I don't know, off the top of my head, Walton probably Clark, Wolfenden. We had this chat on Friday, I think, and Wolfenden and another. Leif Davis, obviously, Morsi and Evans, Burns, Chaplin, Broadhead, and then one of the strikers. But we'll see.
Okay. So how are you actually feeling about this game then, Hutchie? We said it's a must win. It's a good thing, though, isn't it, to have a game like this at home against a side that have been struggling, not played for a couple of weeks? This is the kind of ideal game you'd want to come into, isn't it, after a loss like that at the weekend?
Well, if it's not, then there's an issue, isn't there? If they're not, I would love nothing more than to see them go out there and put in a real good 3-0 dominant victory in this game, and they're more than capable of doing it. I think they'll win. I think they will win, and that'll be a really kind of a good way to go into a sort of low risk, high reward game with Burnley at the weekend, which could be really, actually, if they can do what they need to do in that Burnley game, regardless of the result, could be really important to the season. So I think they'll win this game on Tuesday.
What's your prediction then?
3-0.
Ooh, smoking. Rossi, you was confident?
Well, get the panic button out if they do lose, because I'm sorry to say that will be, I won't say a disaster, but you think, bloody hell, can't beat Morecambe at home. But then Morecambe, I know they're 21st in the league, but they're no mugs. You know, when we played at their place, we got over the line, we got the win finally. But these sort of teams that it's going to be a big day out for them, I'm sure. Again, although Tuesday night, it's a long way to go for them. Of course, this is a rearranged game because we got to the third round in the FA Cup, because this was going to be played on the 7th. as you said, they're unbeaten since there, but they haven't had a game for 2 weeks because of the weather. And I think the Cambridge game got postponed because their one of their stands was not safe or something. But it's, as you said, it's a must win. I'm going to go for a win. Although I've looked at their results, they don't really get beaten heavily. They got beaten 4-0 by MK Dons back in August. But since then, they've lost, you know, 2-1 against Plymouth. They drew against Pompey 1-1, Derby 1-1. They beat Barnsley in October 1-0. So, but I would like us to score a few goals. I think that's what we need. I think some of the players need some confidence, really. Maybe Hurst to get his first goal. You know, what scenes will be if Harry Clark scores on his Portman Road debut. I'm going to go 2-1. 2-1 win. I think we'll be 2-0 up and Morecambe will just score it and that'll be a cagey end to the game. So a 2-1 win. But, you know, I think Morecambe will be a challenge. As I said, I don't think they're mugs. Of course, Connor Ripley, I'm sure, will get a bit of a few little shouts to his end because of his comments last time we played them. But yeah, they're no mugs, Morecambe. Of course, I wouldn't say they're fighting for the eyes at the moment because there's still a lot of games to play. But yeah, it'll be an interesting game on Tuesday night, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Ross bringing out his inner Mick McCarthy there. They're no mugs.
There's no easy game. Yeah. So 3-0, 2-1. I'm going to say 2-0. I don't know if it means anything, but I had a dream about Freddie the Dapo scoring a goal last night. And it's very rare that I dream about football and also can remember what I've dreamt about. So I don't know if that means anything, but I will be putting all the money that I have on Freddie the Dapo scoring tomorrow night. Speaking of which, Hutchie, have you got a £1 million pick for this game?
Yeah, I'll put all of it on Freddie the Dapo to score to score a goal. I haven't even thought about it, which is the beauty of this. I will put some money on Freddie Ladapo to score, actually. I'll put £500,000 on it.
Half a milli. I'll give you 7-1.
All right. Thanks very much.
£500,000. Freddie Ladapo. It's been seen in the sleep of Heath. Ladapo scoring a goal. Oh, Rossi.
Sorry, once again, being a very polite young man. Also, Morecambe's away record is dreadful, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. 1 win, 4 draws, 7 defeats. The one win was back in September against Forest Green. So, yeah. Don't know what you'll take that, whatever. But, yeah, not a great away record for them. So, yeah.
All roads lead to a town win. Although, of course, as a football fan, you hear that stat and you think, well, that's going to end at some point. Hutchie, let's play guess the shirt behind your right-hand shoulder.
I think this might be a struggle.
It's normally a struggle for me anyway. So for those not watching, it's red and white stripes, are those? It's hard to tell.
Yeah,
there are stripes. And it's got a weird kind of situation around the collar.
Ooh.
Oh, Hummel. Okay.
I think I know this.
It's Dutch.
It's Danish.
Danish?
Yeah.
Aalborg?
Copenhagen.
Aalborg. That's just a Danish city, Mark. Just shouting out cities. Copenhagen. That's AOB Aalborg.
Very nice.
You can have an extra point if you can tell me which player Ipswich signed from this club in the past.
Thomas Gardso? No.
Thomas Gardso.
Oh wow.
Roscoe's 2 points for us.
Roscoe's
well
on
done,
fire.
Ross.
Fantastic.
The strike. That's the reason why.
Is that another new addition, Hutchie?
Yep.
Just sit on the rail.
£7, well spent.
Lovely. Move it on. Trading stocks. Make some money on that.
That might stay for a little bit. I quite like it.
Superb. Right then, friends. Is there anything else to discuss before we take our leave and start previewing the Morecambe game tomorrow? Anything else to mention? Rossi, what have you got coming up? The ladies played at the weekend, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. 2-1 win. They just got over the line against London Bees. A very cold the Hive. But yeah, there'll be a Attractive Girls Talk later in the week. Blue Wilson and Natasha Thomas, who scored her 10th goal of the season. So look out for that on our platforms whenever that's out.
And you've also got, and I don't know if we should be revealing this, but you've also lined up your second, after the success of the first one, Matt Holland in pitches, which was brilliant, by the way. And you know how much I enjoyed that because I told you personally in gushing terms. You've also got the second in the series lined up, haven't you? Can we talk about that? That's coming to a screen near you soon.
Yes. Let's not confirm it just yet, just in case stuff happens. You just never know. But yeah, it's a big one. And I'm looking forward to it. And I've got a few others lined up and, yeah, hopefully everyone enjoys it and just something different, you know, looking at old pictures and stuff like that. As you know, I'm a big, big man of, you know, pictures and stuff. Don't know where I'm going with this. But yeah,
a big man of pictures.
Yeah.
I can't believe, mate, you managed to track Ballant Byrne down. It's fantastic work.
I know. Can't wait for it.
You've reeled in a big fish here. It's a big it's a big town fish.
Yes.
Outstanding. So look out for that. Hutchie, anything to mention?
No other business.
Fair enough. We're coming up on an hour then, friends. Your Monday pod is in the bag. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. We've talked a lot around Ipswich Town. We know there's a chance to go again tomorrow night. If you have enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that helps us greatly visibility-wise in the charts. It's also good for our egos to see praise on there, particularly mine. Rossi, do you want to? We had some success with you trailing Ginger Pickle. Do you want to shout out Ginger Pickle as a sponsor?
Yeah, they do marketing and stuff. So check them out. Contact Ginger Pickle for all that stuff. Google ads, websites. You want to improve it? Go for it.
There you go, Tony. Money well spent. And also Manscaped. Use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery on all that excellent clobber. Get yourself trimmed and indeed clothed and smelling nicely through Manscaped. Right then, friends. Ipswich Town, unfortunately, were lost in the fog at the weekend. They've got another chance to go again tomorrow and start what we hope will be a 19-game winning run, which takes them directly up as the champions of League One. We'll see what happens. Enjoy the game if you're going tomorrow night. If you're not, follow it all with us. And we'll be back later on this week to break it all down. Enjoy.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.